Thank you, Deanna and Lee. As I've listened here the last three Sundays, it has seemed to me that all three of the sermons were very logical introductions to this morning's talk, even though we didn't exactly plan it that way. Mike Clark brought us lessons from his work on difficult issues of civil rights, poverty, education, and other social justice causes. Reverend Duffy has reminded us of both the challenges of living democracy as a religious value and the support and encouragement we can draw from community in these polarized times. When I was looking for readings for this service, I was struck by a limitation in the texts I found under the heading of community. They are all inward-looking, about us. At a Mountain Desert District event a few years ago, Nancy Bowen, who was our district executive, used a striking gesture when talking about our congregation as places of sanctuary. She did this to symbolize our communities that we form. And that represents the comfort and support we derive from our community. But then she went on to note that the circle has an outside. So much as we hope our congregations are welcoming, there is still a sense in which they exclude. We are encouraged these days to get out of our bubbles, to engage with those whose views are different. Our last three services have, each in its own way, reminded us of that challenge, but it's hard. How do we do that? Today, Barb Sestero will give us some tools to help break through our bubbles. And I believe some of you do already know Barb, I've seen the interactions, but Barb moved west shortly after college to explore the West's mountains, rivers, and wide open spaces. Since then, she has worked as an outdoor educator, wilderness guide, community organizer, facilitator, consultant, and public lands advocate. Currently, she works for the Wilderness Society and has a small consulting business called Common Ground Solutions. And she still enjoys exploring our public lands, mostly on foot or on ski with her dog Pepper.
Thank you, Peg. Can everybody hear me? Does that work? Great. Thank you, Peg, and good morning, everyone. Thank you all for welcoming me here, too, this morning. So as Peg noted in my introduction, my Sundays are usually spent in the mountains, either on foot or on ski or on a river somewhere. So I have to confess, as I sat down on Friday to prepare my remarks, I felt a little out of my element and really was wondering what I might offer of value this morning. And then I read your mission statement on the order of service that Peg had shared with me. And I think that these principles and practices of this thing called gracious space will resonate. Gracious Space is the creation of the Center for Ethical Leadership in Seattle, and I first learned about it through my participation in Leadership Montana. And the ideas behind it are at once simple, even elegant, and yet remarkably difficult to put into practice. Yet I've come to see these ideas of gracious space as a path forward to create and restore some of the civic space and dialogue it seems we're so missing in this era of deep division. To help rebuild civility and collaboration as positive values in our democracy. So before I get too deep into defining gracious space, I want to invite you to take a moment just to consider the meaning of these two words, gracious space. And so if you will, just close your eyes for a moment and think of a minute of a time when you have experienced something that you might call gracious space. Who is there? What is happening? What feelings are you experiencing? And what are the characteristics that make this experience unique enough that it's the one that comes to mind right now? So when I've asked other groups to share words that describe the experience that's come to mind in this exercise, lots of similarities emerge, and maybe they have for you too. People use words like creative, connected, curiosity, safe, non-judgment, respect, learning, and listening to describe the experiences that come to mind. For me, gracious space is about connection. It's a way for us to deeply connect with others, whether in our families, our work, or our communities. The actual definition is quite simple and includes four key elements. Gracious space is a spirit and a setting where we invite the stranger and learn in public. So now I want to share a little bit about each of these four elements with you. I think of the first two elements, spirit and setting, as the ways in which we as individuals can embody gracious space in our day-to-day interactions with the people around us. And the second two elements of inviting the stranger and learning the public and learning in public are the doing pieces of gracious space. They're harder to put into practice. They're the ones that require some action of us that takes us out of our comfort zone. So spirit, the first element, is really about how we show up in any given conversation or situation. It's the fact that we can be gracious space. How do we walk into a room? What are the qualities that the people around us know us for? Spirit is about our own energy, the mood, the presence, and the personal traits that we bring that can spread like wildfire through a group. It's about bringing our best stuff into any moment. I learned about being gracious space before I even knew gracious space was a thing from a Montana rancher that I've worked with over the years. We were at a regular watershed meeting together when a staunch opponent of public lands grazing showed up to the meeting. And I watched my rancher friend welcome this man with kindness and patience. He let the other man say his piece, even though I knew he vehemently disagreed with much of it. He even got curious and asked questions. And he shared his own ideas in an honest and straightforward way. By the time the meeting ended, the newcomer looked at me and said, "Wow, that was fun." So spirit is also about the energy of a group. It's about intentionally creating a supportive environment for the conversation or the work at hand. Is a group's energy welcoming, positive, optimistic? How do people in the group interact with and treat each other? And then last, spirit is really about that wellspring that we each tap into that's constant, personal, and immune from the ups and downs of others' moods and actions. For some, that can be described as faith. Others can find it in the mission and vision of an organization or in a sense of shared purpose of some group that they're a part of. For me, that wellspring has always been nature and being outside. This element, spirit, is nurtured by practicing intention, compassion, and curiosity. By asking ourselves, how do I or we as a group want to show up in this moment or situation? These practices of spirit, the intention, compassion, and curiosity, are going to become ever more critical when we get into the doing elements of gracious space, as you'll see in a minute. Setting is the second element, and in many ways, it's probably the most easiest to just get. It is the physical setting for an interaction or a conversation or a gathering. How many of you have ever been to a gathering in a windowless basement meeting room? Or a meeting that started off by diving straight into the substance of the meeting without any round of introductions? Or how many of you have tried to have a difficult conversation with someone in a noisy, crowded space? Then you know the impact that setting can have on how it feels to be a part of that interaction, or the possibility of successfully meeting the outcomes of whatever the gathering's purpose was. So to get setting right, you really have to know the purpose of the gathering and the interaction or interaction and plan the agenda and the space and the approach to meet that purpose. Like today, for a lecture, the room is arranged so everyone is looking up at the podium, which is appropriate, although a little intimidating for me. But if we wanted to have a discussion, this setting really wouldn't work because we can't all see each other, so we'd have to rearrange. I've walked into settings where the energy was really tense, like everyone was ready for a fight. And the simple act of rearranging the space, breaking people up into small groups around round tables so they could have a conversation, has really shifted that energy to a creative and positive one that you can hear in the rising noise level in the room. And it's not rising because people are yelling at each other. In my day job, I recently went to one of those meetings where no one around the table really knew each other. And the leader of the meeting dove right into the substance of the agenda without any round of introductions. And it really made the whole thing started off feeling a little forced. Everybody, I think, was a little thrown, and the conversation was really stilted. Like, we were all wondering what we were really there for. And then finally, some smart person said, "Can we introduce ourselves and go around and share a little bit about who we are and why we're here?" And that changed the whole energy. An even simpler example, I painted my office this fall. It had been a deep, dark green, and with only one western-facing window out on a parking lot, it really felt like a dark cave. And as the fall approached and the days got shorter, I just thought, I can't do it again. I can't do another winter. So I painted it a bright orange, or a bright yellow, warm and welcoming. And we've noticed not only do I feel better in my office space, but when my colleagues come in to talk about something, we stay. Whereas we used to get up instinctively and go somewhere else to have our conversation. So again, this practice of setting is to really intentionally think about it, to pay attention to those details of seemingly simple comforts like windows and food and lighting, because it can really change the whole energy of an encounter. The third element of invite the stranger is probably the most difficult and the most important. In many ways, it's the crux move of gracious space. It's also my favorite because done well, I think it leads to the most productive, creative conversations and solutions. Inviting the stranger asks us to intentionally seek out the other. It requires us to be active, to go and do something. Inviting the stranger asks us to think about and figure out who is missing in this conversation. What is the strange idea or the person who never shows up that we can learn from? And then go out and invite that stranger into dialogue and create a space in which their voice, ideas, and input can really be heard. I have two quotes taped to my computer that, to me, embody this element of gracious space. The first reads, "Everyone owns a piece of the truth." And the second says, "Our strength comes not from the hardness of our positions, but from our ability to see across the divide and recognize allies." Making assumptions and decisions without diverse input limits our thinking and possibilities for creative action. It increases the risk that we've incorrectly assessed the problem or someone else's needs. And it definitely increases the risk of not getting buy-in. For me and my conservation work, this means listening to and talking with those who have a completely different perspective than I do on our public lands. For example, folks who work in the timber industry, or ranchers who graze their cattle and sheep on public lands, or those who get into the backcountry in ways different than me, on snowmobile or dirt bike, to really understand their interests and values. These are the people that are affected by the work that I do, and they're the people that know a lot about the places I work on behalf of. So we have much to learn from each other. I also know what it's like to be the stranger. As a woman from Bozeman who loves wilderness and leans to the left politically, working in with rural Montana communities on conservation issues, I am oftentimes the stranger. And for me, that's a powerful reminder that we are each the stranger to someone else. So how do we break down the barriers so we can connect as people? Now you likely see why this one is also the most difficult element to practice. It's the one that risks making us uncomfortable. It risks conflict, because by inviting the stranger, we're bringing difference into the room, and that means we're not all going to agree. So don't be surprised when you're inviting the stranger and it results in different opinions and some conflict. For me, gracious space is that place to have our most difficult conversations. It asks us to consider that people describing different sides of the same coin can both be right. And if we don't invite and learn from diverse perspectives, I believe ultimately our change efforts will fail. So for me, gracious space can provide the container in which we can disagree without being disagreeable. It's a practice of accepting what's offered. When someone says something you don't agree with, how can you say yes and to build on that idea towards some new creative solution? Instead of saying, yeah, but, and stopping the exploration in its tracks. The Center for Ethical Leadership describes this element as the business case for gracious space, because inviting the stranger can lead to better decisions. It really can help us see and overcome our own blind spots. And in this rapidly changing, complicated world of ours, with an overwhelming avalanche of information, it's simply not possible for any one person or group or organization to know everything that we need to know. We must seek out varied perspectives, backgrounds, and experiences. The management consultant and author Peter Senge says, "When people differ, it's an opportunity to get smarter about the system." I believe inviting the stranger is how to get smarter about the system. So the final element is learning in public. And this is the element where all the pieces of gracious space can come together, where we bring our best spirit into a setting that's welcoming, we invite difference, and we learn together. This is where we open to possibilities, to hearing new ideas, to actually learning something new. And if we aren't careful, it's the place where we just might change our mind. That makes learning in public a vulnerable space. And it's definitely scary because it means taking some risks. Especially as adults, it's really hard to change our minds. And it's even more hard to do that in public. It's hard to say, "I don't know," in front of others, especially if you're the leader. So learning in public is also an active element. It requires us to practice our best active living, active listening, and inquiry skills, to suspend judgments and create the room to explore our assumptions and understand others' perspectives better. These last two elements are what make gracious space a collaborative leadership model that is specifically designed to use in those situations where we're trying to work together across boundaries and across difference. So taken together, I think the four elements of gracious space create a really powerful container for working through the dynamics of change, whether it's in our community, in an organization, or in a family. hope I've shared some useful concepts and practices in describing this thing called gracious space this morning. None of it's really new, and as I noted when I saw these principles reflected in your mission statement, I also see them reflected in many of the world's spiritual traditions. For me, what's unique about gracious space is that this simple package of the four elements of a spirit and a setting where we invite the stranger and learn in public is useful because it creates a common language and a framework that's easy to remember. And my hope as I do this work around gracious space is that this simple package can help as we work to rebuild civility and collaboration in our communities and institutions and even in our democracy. So with that, I'll just close with a quote that one of my gracious space teachers uses to sum up the possibility of gracious space. She says, "If we can turn toward each other and dance together, then something different will happen." Thank you.